Hey folks, you're listening to a special 9-part series on gender, gender politics, and gender equality. Obviously, you can do what you'd like in terms of how you listen to them, but I've designed these to be listened to in order. Each episode builds on the last one in a logical way. Think of it like you'd think of a book. If you take things out of order, a lot of it is going to be hard to understand or just seem off. So if you've just stumbled into this episode, please go back to the start. Otherwise, thanks for listening to everything in order. Let's get into it. Welcome back for today's episode. We're talking about gender separate spaces and doing things in gender separate ways. So technically, that's kind of it, everything from like casual but intentional, like girls or boys nights out or whatever, sorry about the binary, through to gender exclusive workplaces, gender exclusive schools, literally any space where there's an intention that people are included or excluded based on their gender. That said, I'm probably more crucially sort of focusing on anything that's in the self-development, therapy, recovery, psychology space, like support groups, men's circles, women's circles, anything in that particular category, I think is like particularly relevant to what I'd like to discuss. But yeah, pretty wide range of stuff. I note that in preparing for this, a lot of my examples are focusing on women-specific spaces, and I want to talk to that a little bit first. I think part of the reason is that male-specific spaces in those domains of kind of like self-development, betterment, empowerment, therapy, recovery, etc., are like kind of almost non-existent. Not non-existent, but they're really uncommon. But all of this thinking absolutely still applies. Maybe as a operator of a venue, there's like relevant data there. Myself and some friends ran a venue for a number of years, which was often used by the self-development and sex positivity community for stuff. It's hard to quantify, but like at a guess, I would say there would easily be 10 women specific groups per month coming through. And I think in the entirety of the life of the venue, I think we had 3 male specific groups use the space. That's a long way from good, hard, proper data science, but feels about right to me in terms of where the emphasis is. Also, though, influencing my examples are that I'm living in my own little bubble. I decided a long time ago for me not to do gender spaces, but I move in a community that does gender spaces a lot, particularly the women folk around me. So that's heavily influences the examples I've picked up along the way.
Do you think that spaces like this, is there a gender divide in the modality that they show up in? Modality is maybe not the right word.
Yeah, how do you mean the modality?
I mean modality as in person versus online.
Oh, haven't thought about it, don't know. Do you have thoughts?
I suspect, just from anecdotal evidence and what I'm seeing with teenage boys and stuff like that, that online is a mechanism that is more readily available and accessible and safe,
right,
for non-women type folk, particularly the men type folk and boys, whereas women may be more deliberate about meeting in person and connecting. And what we're, when we talk about some of, you know, what we've talked about previously in ways that are safe to get emotional support, we know that that's less safe for men to show up, even with other men, to do that in person. So,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say possibly. I definitely say it's less of a part of male socialization to be thinking in terms of, hey, a support group would be great in the first place. So there's much less likely to be intentionality around a environment like that. I think a lot of gender separate spaces for men happen by happenstance. So either like male dominated or male exclusive workplaces, male business lunches, blah, 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 all of that stuff. They're much more likely to be haphazard and they're much less likely to be focusing on us as men. Let's together get together and take pride and bond and talk about our experiences in life. I'm really sorry that I laughed then. That was bad timing. It's just that it's so unfamiliar to me that
I've lived in workplaces with that actually occurring, so it would not be the first time I've ended up with a predominantly, at a Christmas party and then an after Christmas party where it's predominantly been men, and we end up at a strip club. Like, that's what you do when you're really drunk.
Yes. So,
And I'm talking, more early 2000 corporate, but.
sure. So yes, definitely haphazard spaces happen. I maybe even at a guess, there's probably some equality around that at a guess. I'm not sure. But yeah, for today, mostly thinking about intentional, supportive, self-development, therapeutic style of spaces.
Gotcha.
And yeah, just finishing off on why I might be focusing a little bit on women's specific spaces is because when we're talking about solving the problems with men, what happens in gender separate spaces is crucial. So this might sound a little bit ominous, and it might sound like I'm opposed to gender separate spaces.
Is that because you are, Rog?
For myself, that is the conclusion I've reached. I'll talk more about that later.
Yep.
For the rest of the world, I want to admit to being absolutely genuinely confused about that issue because there is no denying the incredible benefit that people get from intentional gender separate spaces. And no person, including myself, would. How can you possibly deny someone those benefits and those advantages and that whatever, therapy, support, community, etc., etc.?
It's the absence of balance, I think, that you're worried about.
Well, I think there are obviously a lot of benefits from those spaces, but there are some drawbacks. And I can't ignore the benefits, and I also can't ignore the drawbacks. I think very few people have looked at the drawbacks, but fortunately, we're going to solve that problem, which is going to leave
Okay.
us collectively with this amazing size problem at the end of today, which is like, how do you balance those needs? So, yeah, that's definitely a case of not burying the lead. So yeah, the summary of the challenges is I will attempt to articulate how gender separate spaces can contribute to toxic masculinity, how they can contribute to gender stereotypes, how they can make the gender war worse or much worse, how they push women and men and other genders apart from each other, and how they set us up for personal failure in the future.
Sounds merry.
Yeah, isn't that joyful, kids? So yeah, wowee, have we got some work to do. And I have almost like I noticed I have some nerves leading up to that to recording today, because I think in my experience of talking about all the gender stuff, I think this is perhaps the most sensitive issue out of like certainly all the stuff we're chatting about in this series. But I think maybe possibly full stop for people, like when you're bouncing around ideas and you're tossing around, what's important to people, what's not. I feel like this is one of the most sensitive and important, and therefore scary areas. Just wanted to name that out loud.
Which is interesting because I've always found gender separate spaces very scary because I would be more regarded as a typical mask type in the way that I don't really want to do emotions and I don't really want to talk about them unless I have to, and all of those kind of things. So I find women-only environments are very difficult to navigate.
Gotcha. I understand. Thank you for expanding. Yeah, I feel very similar. So I identify as non-binary or more accurately, probably like non-gendered. I don't like the idea of having to choose one or the other or being defined by any of them. And every now and again, I dip my toe back in the water of men-only spaces, intentional men's spaces. And it's just that there's almost inevitably a degree of supporting me to get into my masculine, and I start going insane at that point in time. I feel very unseen, and it feels like it's undoing a lot of important work. Okay.
Interesting hearing this though. I'm just quickly wondering because I identify as a female and a she her and but I'm definitely not your girly type of girl. I don't own a hairbrush or and I don't do my nails and all that sort of stuff. And so I've sometimes struggled with women only spaces. And yet a couple of times when I've been sort of more accidentally in we I don't I probably hunted out a women's only space once or twice in my life to sort of go, oh, I might try and see what this is, and then go, not so sure. But then accidentally a couple of times I've been in them and gone, oh, I really got something out of that that I would not have got. I really don't think I would have if there were males in that particular space. And maybe that's completely not true, but I don't know, it felt like it was really different. There was a workshop that I did on anger management, and the weekend was grand. They run the workshop with mixed and all genders, and they run it. I don't know whether they run it, maybe they run it men only, but they certainly at this particular point ran it for women only, and it just happened to be the only one that I could get into. And I went, oh, bugger, all right, I'll do it. And I found it amazing, and it was really useful for me. And I felt like I was less distracted in my own little head of like, oh, what am I doing? I don't know. Anyway, I just found it quite a surprisingly good space. But I am really like, I'm really hanging out to hear what you're going to talk about, Raj, because I'm just like, oh, I don't know where I sit with any of it. I wouldn't sort of go, oh yeah, we need space. Like I've never been a yes, we need those spaces. And yet, yeah, there's been a couple of times I've really gotten a lot out of them, and there's lots of people I know who do them, but then there's a lot of things that I think are really pukey and dangerous about them. So it's kind of, I'm very keen to hear what else you're going to dig up for us.
You know what could be really super fun? So firstly, thank you for speaking to that, and you're I'm thank you for voicing the importance of gender separate spaces, and that something different can happen in there. What could be really fun? Can we circle back and check in after I've articulated a few points and concerns?
Yeah, I'm keen.
Cool. Okay, great. So I've managed to whittle the list down to 9 main points.
Nine.
I also have to admit before we get into them that just for transparency, I've realized in preparing this material a part of me is jealous. So I've also been in some, obviously they're not women-only spaces if I'm there, but I've been in quite a few spaces that are a hell of a lot like women-only spaces, despite the fact that I'm there. And frankly, I'm jealous. Those spaces are incredible. And my jealousy is not the world's problem to solve. It's mine and mine alone. But I just wanted to declare it at the top, partly because it can be an incredible driver of bias. I also want to name, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, something like wanting what other people have is what got the entire women's movement started in the first place. So there's a usefulness in jealousy. But yeah, I just wanted to clear Hey, I hope you're enjoying the series. I do this for the love of it, but there is something I'd like your help with. I'd love it if you can share this with someone. At some stage during this series, when someone comes to mind that might be interested, please go right ahead and click the share button. I'm aware that in some circles this can be pretty contentious material, so here's a tip. You don't have to say, "Hey, I love this, you will too." You can just say, "There's some food for thought here," or something similarly ambiguous and non-committal. It's all good. So yeah, at some stage during this series, please share it with someone. Now, back to the content. Point number one. They teach you that only spaces with people like you are safe. So a lot of the time it's like we need to create a container of safety so that we can look into stuff and work on stuff. And obviously we need to exclude the other gender, which is an amazing statement. I think it has horrible implications for people who are heterosexual, and so therefore at some stage in the future wind up in a relationship by definition with someone of the quote other unquote sex, because they've been through this surreptitious subconscious training saying that people of the other sex are not safe. So what the fuck happens when you get into a conflict or like emotionally vulnerable, scary territory and you're with the enemy? So that's like the relationship level of it. And then there's the larger scale of it. Like you also find yourself in similar situations in workplace dynamics. So it means that workplace conflicts or workplace discussions on some level feel less safe. And also I think since a lot of what gets discussed in gender separate spaces is gender inequality and so forth, I think just like this specific topic that we're doing here gets a lot harder the more you've spent time learning about and talking about these subjects only with people of your own gender. So the gender war itself gets harder. I think also to say that only people like me are safe, it goes against the entire modality of counseling and psychology and psychotherapy. I mean, like, if that wasn't the case, then you would only be able to choose counselors who have been through are the same as you and who have been through the same stuff as you, which is wild. I mean, you say it out loud, it's really obvious that, of course, as humans, we have the capacity to relate and hear and understand across lines. And as someone that's experienced a bit of counseling training myself, one of the most dangerous things you can do as a counselor is assume that if you do have something in common with your client, that you know anything about your client. Because we could be the same people and go through the same experience, but where we go with it and how we experience it and what we find joyful or problematic about it could be entirely completely different. Yeah, so in some ways coming in with a blank mind is better. So that's point one. They teach you that only spaces with people like you are safe. Point number two, just a quick little note really. There has to be an incredible usefulness in comparing notes with people like you, just to kind of go, oh, looks like we've been through some similar things. We've been socialized in similar ways. We have similar privileges or a lack of privileges. There has to be a usefulness in comparing notes and working out what is a social, structural kind of a patterning, conditioning, socialization issue and what is unique to you. And I think a lot of people start with that, but then wind up. I was about to say stuck in that dynamic, stuck in that gender separateness for much longer periods of time, past that initial usefulness of comparing notes. Point number three, every separatist group is a bubble. So literally every separatist group you can think of, so religious groups or like gun rights groups, I don't know how they made it into my head. Political parties, even like following a particular sports ball team. Yeah, you see the same dynamics play out there. Literally every separatist group is a bubble unto itself. So they become one-sided in their views. There are no checks and balances on those views. Like since other people are not present in the space, there's no one to really speak for those issues or to experience the pain of how they're being spoken about or anything like that. And there's often very little in the way of counterpoint. The group itself, here's something that's really scary about human psychology. The group itself actually benefits from unchecked rage, anger, hatred, and othering. Like groups get stronger the more you can poke your finger at another group. And the more you feel separate and angry and warlike in relation to them.
The enemy of the enemy is my friend.
Yeah. So before long, a very one-sided perspective starts to feel like it's the only perspective, to the point where it gets harder to interface with other people or with other views. I mean, we know this. We see this all over social media the entire time. The moment you step outside your bubble, you go, whoa, that was an experience. And you also, if you invest a lot of time just in people, with people like yourself, just the skill, your fitness around coping with diversity of perspectives and being challenged and all that sort of stuff, you get less fit on that front. Also, with bubbles, if it's a sort of a therapy group or some kind of recovery group, the more the group leans towards a statement, which is something like, what happened to you was all of those people over there against all of us. Like it wasn't a one-on-one thing. It was all of them calculated against all of us deliberately. Things just get so much more stacked against you in terms of your capacity to mingle and to see the other side as human. Separatist groups also tend to oversimplify things into a very negative way. I don't know if you've ever had the experience with someone where, for whatever reason, you've been slighted or you feel like someone's ignored you or been nasty or harsh to you or something. And then you have the conversation with them and you hear their side of the story and you go, wow, that's so much more complicated than I was expecting. Like, I can see you were under stress and duress and you didn't mean it to be so pokey, or you had an entirely different intention to the one that I imagined you to have. So I think as individuals, we know that. And separatist groups tend to do that en masse. I think these patterns are very easy to spot in other groups. So, probably an easy example is if we look at what you might regard as the bad parts of the men's movement. So, I'm talking about like the angry, threatening side of the incels, because there's also a non-angry side to the incels. But yeah, the angry, threatening side of the incels, the pickup artists, the conservatives, and so forth. We talk about groups like that, we instantly go, that separatism, there's problems with that. And that lack of checks and balances in the system, there's problems with that. And so I guess my question is, why would we think any other forms of separatism are any different? And I want to suggest that maybe they're not, unless they're done extremely carefully. I guess from a therapeutic perspective, like if it's some kind of support or recovery group, of course you can't have the person that caused you harm present as you're reclaiming your power. But to say that that entire gender that that person represents cannot be present while I am doing therapy and doing my healing work, yeah, that really buys into the idea that it was that entire gender.
Similar to saying, sorry, if someone blonde was the perpetrator, then I can't be around anyone blonde in my recovery.
And ironically enough, I know you're saying that to effectively kind of make a joke, because it sounds stupid to ban the blondes, but it is hilarious. We do see this play out on race grounds. Like if this does happen in terms of black hair and blonde hair, and it's the same messy othering.
The same impact.
Same impact. Same consequences. And just to finish this out a little with personal story, I feel like in my time, I've watched this personally when I've had female partners come back from certain groups that have really lent into rage, anger, othering, and so forth. And frankly, they just come back nasty. Like things are more terse and more tense and more quick to attack. I just feel like I've witnessed that. How are we going? That was the point on bubbles and othering.
I see some of this stuff play out in, or have seen it play out a little bit in people who've discovered sexuality spaces, and they become real strong advocates for being a slut and being, sex and like, yay. It takes them a while to come back and integrate that into a more holistic kind of viewpoint. It's like, ah, yes, this is great. Also, it doesn't have to be for everybody. And also, it doesn't, just because everybody's not like this doesn't diminish that I am and I have a community like that. It doesn't make the other community bad or wrong or anything like that.
Yeah, beautiful. I don't want to shame you for not respecting my version of the timeline, but that's point eight.
When have I ever respected timelines? Church groups do it to a certain extent as well. So when you join a church, there's a lot of
Yes.
othering sometimes in church communities. And, well, if you don't go to church, then you are all of these things that aren't great. Rather than, oh, I've just found this wonderful community where we do wonderful community things, and that being the focus. So that othering plays out in other spaces as well.
It really does. Churches are such great examples. One true God. Like you've got to abandon belief in all of the other gods and declare your intentions here. And I love what you say also about you've got to actually turn up and keep demonstrating your commitment to the group. Otherwise, there will be consequences.
Yes, I've seen it play out in friends, been ostracized because of various things over the time. Yeah.
Beautiful. Not that beautiful, but thank you for saying. I like that you said it.
Thanks.
I think we've already touched on point four. It does relate to sexual exploration, but we're deep diving into this a bit, like I say, I think in point eight. But in the case of the exploration of sexuality, spaces for women are often done separately for safety or because it's a safer space. This then has an ironic effect of reinforcing and amplifying that message because you tend to associate your sexuality and exploration of it as something that can only happen amongst other women folk. So again, if there's a male folk in the space, then that must be unsafe. There must be a threat there. So yeah, just again, I guess that's just the same point around separatism creates further problems in hetero relationships, at least.
In that instance, it's more the predator archetype. That's what's being played out in that space. But having men folk in there is we can't do that because there's a predator in our midst, so we can't relax and enjoy our bodies and experience that. Yeah.
Yes, and it tends to keep exaggerating itself to the point where almost everything that a male type person does can be seen as a predator move, and those exact same behaviours in a female type person can be seen as reclaiming your sexuality.
Yep.
That's what happens when there's a lack of check and balances in the system and a lack of alternative
Yes.
perspectives. If you're thinking, come on, Rog, that sounds a bit far-fetched, we don't really have double standards like that, then check out episode 75 from June 2022 with the words dick pics in the title. It's a deep dive into a behaviour, not dick pics, something far worse, that is regarded as funny and sexy when she does it, but it's regarded as sexual assault and criminal conduct when he does it. Okay, point number five, I think, is probably the one I'm most passionate about. When we're in gender separate spaces, we don't hear each other's stories. And I think in most of the mess that's going on in the world, certainly anything to do with the gender war and gender equality and gender exploration, we so absolutely desperately need the other side to hear our stories and hear what's going on for us and hear what it's like being treated, well, going through this world as a female, male, non-binary, trans, whatever person. We're so desperate for other people to hear, yet we create spaces where they literally cannot hear that story. We can see the need for that in basically every other kind of justice and reconciliation modality that exists in the world, like the need to hear all sides of a story. So the Truth, Justice, Reconciliation movement from South Africa in particular, but Africa, the need to hear from all sides of the story to actually be able to progress that, and the recognition that if you've just got one side of the story, it's you don't have a sense of moving on. I don't know if you two are familiar with restorative justice, but it's a modality that spends a lot of time. We've done some earlier episodes on it around working with sexual assault and using the language of the person that caused harm and the person that received harm. It is just absolutely crucial that in this case, the person that caused harm hears the story in full. And it's also an important part of the person's healing to have their story heard.
Believe I've listened to those episodes.
Great. And even in our default adversarial justice system in Australia or wherever, which we all acknowledge is a pretty crude system, even that system recognises that you've got to have both sides of the story before you can cast judgment.
Well, if we had a really good example of it as well in our first episode on this stuff, we were talking about privilege and medical privilege, and I was talking about some of the difficulty for women obtaining certain types of medical help and really being able to engage with that. And you brought up your lived experience of, well, actually, a very similar kind of lived experience, which, unless we were talking about this stuff, well, yeah, I would absolutely not have had that balance.
Right, beautiful. Perfect example. Thank you.
Inga raises such a good point here, and I just want to drop in to highlight it a little more.
You may recall in the first episode, Inga spoke about wanting to get a tubal ligation, but had initially been denied their right to that service by the medical system. Inga assumed at the time that this was a gendered example of the medical system, or slash the man, controlling their choices, or in this case, I guess you might say her choices. And if we were in a women's circle and Inga had brought that issue up in that context, you can imagine there would have been a lot of reinforcement of that perspective and perhaps sharing of similar stories, which would seem to add to the problem, and a lot of impotent anger, by which I mean a lot of anger where there's just very little you can do about that. It's a very frustrating situation where it's very hard to get justice. However, when this came up in the first episode, Inga happened to raise it in an environment with me present, and I have had literally exactly the precise same thing happen when I went to get my tubes tied. I mean, albeit my tubes are male presenting, but other than that, literally exactly the same process of being initially denied my right to agency and control over my body and reproductive system. What that left the two of us with was a sense of solidarity and a sameness and things in common, which was a good outcome, I think. What happens in gender separate spaces when we talk about stuff like this, it feels so real, and sometimes it is, but sometimes it can just be misplaced, impotent anger. I've made a little word whoopsie here. I think I'm accidentally saying impudent, or nearly that word, when I mean impotent. And in this context, I mean impotent as in when you're in a rage about something or something's not right, but your options don't feel like they're very potent. So you feel impotent to do anything about that issue. I think the tragedy about this is that you never know which is which, and you suffer pain through the anger you feel and the sense that you are being oppressed or suppressed, that you just don't have to suffer. And also there's further suffering that comes from this, in that whoever the other is, in this case it's men from Inga's example, they will feel your wrath. It turns out for no good reason on this occasion. This is not, of course, to say that this same pattern doesn't also play out in really good ways. As I said earlier in the episode, and I'll say again here now, a lot of good comes from, quote, comparing notes, unquote, with other people like yourself to, you know, spot the patterns that you've got in common. But yeah, in addition to that, a lot of one-sided perspective happens and misplaced anger.
So yeah, I think we all know fundamentally, like with conflict, there's always two sides to the story. Yet we set up spaces specifically to exclude the other side, and where we can just lock hard onto a conclusion, and then we just wind up sort of one-sided and angry. And yeah, I honestly think that a lot of the gender war is just that we have not listened to the other side, and we have not had the other side listen to us. The more we listen, the less angry we get in general. Also, most importantly, I think when we hear stories, that becomes an incredible motivator for changed behavior. So if someone just wags a finger at you and says, don't do blah, 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 it's all a bit academic and detached. But you actually, when you actually sit down with someone and you hear in long form their story and their pain, their experience of what it's like for them, I think as humans, we have more of a built-in mechanism to be able to react. You can't unhear that story. And if you are part of what's been causing that grief or that problem, you're much more likely to have changed behavior if you've heard those stories.
Particularly if they're in non-accusatory ways.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's a big component of that.
That's a big one. If you're actually on some level welcomed into the space and you're not being laughed at or judged, or whatever, it puts you in a spot where you can actually really openly, genuinely listen, and it's safe for you to do so. That story goes in, and it goes in deep, and it's very hard not to act on it. It reminds me of, I was interviewed once by, I'm not naming names, but I was interviewed once by another sex educator And we were talking about, like, it's fair to say that pretty much all the workshops I've run have got, by most people's standards, a heavy focus on consent. And not much focus at all, by which I mean none, on traditionally sexy things like, lingerie and the element of surprise and so forth. And the interviewer was asking me why I have such a heavy focus on it. And in the moment, it just kind of stumped me because I couldn't work out what it was. But I've thought about that question many times. And a lot of it for me comes back to the fact that I said before, I've been in some spaces with, that you might regard as women's circle kind of spaces. I have certainly been, hang on, I don't want to find my words very carefully here. I have been trusted to listen to some horrible stories. I don't know how one cannot act for change after hearing people's stories. But if you don't get to hear those stories, yeah.
We are definitely storytelling creatures.
We are. We
How
are.
we integrate and how we interact and yeah.
Yeah. So I think just wiping my tears away and trying to find my place in my loose script. One of the things that saddens me a little bit is women often, very understandably from one perspective, wonder out loud, why don't men get it? Like, why do they not get this stuff? Why do they not understand? And Inga, you raised a great point in that a lot of the times when that stuff is spoken about and men are present, it's done in a way that's actually humiliating them or assuming that they're the predator or that they're guilty or they're to blame. Not much of the story goes in that environment. Also, the sorts of the casual spaces where you're likely to be talking about sex and consent and relationships, men are less likely to be in those spaces. And obviously, if it's a women's group, there's no chance of having men in that space. So I know that from a women's perspective, when you look at the media around you and the way it's framed and the way it holds and includes you and the nuance and the depth with which it explores things like consent and touch and feedback and relationship skills and communication, particularly if you've been in the self-development community for a while, you can kind of shake your head and just go, why don't men get it? And the answer is very simply, they haven't been there. It's a question of educational privilege. They haven't been exposed to the education and the stories and the experiences that you have.
It's also
Oh,
there's
sorry,
not.
Andy. The
That's all
certainly
right,
not the
go.
quantity. That was all I was just going to add to that. Even if they have, if some men have had an experience or two of this, it's very vastly different from 200 stories. Or
Right.
like quantity makes a big difference in that. Sorry, you go ahead.
That's okay. What I also find is it's very difficult to listen to someone's story if they're very angry, and you feel even if everything else is okay, if they're very angry about the thing that happened, and in the media and everywhere, it's also telling you it's all your fault. It's very difficult to distance yourself from not being the target of that anger, even if you're not in the moment.
Yeah, and a lot of this has got to do with how the space is held. So I spoke before about the intention and the focus of the group. A lot of groups are deliberately aiming to shape stories and anger and funnel that into rage against the other. And it's extremely hard to be the other in a space like that. But you can absolutely do the opposite. Like, you can create a space where let's not talk about anyone in terms of generalizations or and stuff like that. And I think that when the space is and the intention is appropriate, anger is awesome. And hearing someone's anger is awesome. Emma, you mentioned about numbers, like quantity. And ironically, we're into generalization territory here. Nevertheless, a woman type person might have had 200 experiences like that, and a man might have had two or three. What the man has also had is, in the absence of sex education, he's probably picking up his lessons about sex from schoolyard environments, casual chitter chatter, porn, and really bad role modeling in movies. And so there's a lot of forces working against. So Yeah, so that's point number five. As I say, I think that's one of the most important points in this whole mix. We don't hear each other's stories, so of course we don't get each other, and of course behavior doesn't change. Should we go to point number six?
Sure.
Okay. Gender separate spaces buy into the idea that women are from Venus and men are from Mars. Almost all gender groups at some stage encourage you to go more deeply into your feminine or your masculine, and huge apologies to the minority genders. A lot of this conversation is in binary, and especially a shout out to Tantra circles, which is definitely where I've spent a bit of time in my life. And, to be sure, a lot of people, I would say most people, actually think this is good, and I can see the advantage in that. But at this stage in the gender war and the gender equality movement, my feeling on that is that we need to be focusing on what we have in common rather than what we have in difference. Separation is easier in the short term, I think, but I think it's a disaster in the long run because you just can't get away from, I mean, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to go, all right, let's define what men and women are like. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump to different socialization, different job opportunities, different family opportunities, and all the other stuff that goes with it. You can't help but to that those ideas of separateness and difference will come up. And I feel like if I can speak on behalf of original feminism from the 70s, like the core messages there were around that we should be judged as individuals and based on our actions rather than being judged by our gender. The core lesson was that our gender doesn't define us or our possibilities. But yeah, a lot of gender separate spaces are going in a very, very different direction. They're all effectively saying, fuck that. Yeah. Sorry, Inga, you had a thought?
That's okay. There's two kind of impacts to that. If you don't fit either well enough, then you don't really fit either, as in as what like anywhere. So, and that we find, non-binary folk and trans folk suffering more because of those kind of thoughts. Is that they are everybody is, there are two types, and if you don't fit that, you have to fit one or the other, and if you don't, that's a problem. So we have it furthers issues in that space as well. And the other is that there is an opportunity to see those attributes as something everyone can experience and experience one and then experience the other and then find the mix that works.
Nice.
Which it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be separate, which is what you are saying. Yes.
Nice. Love it. Point seven. Okay. If the motivator is safety, then this effectively means that no amount of work that I do on myself, no amount of self-development that I do, no amount of my commitment to non-violence will ever make me safe. And furthermore, just putting me into a space ruins it or makes it unsafe. And I can't even really find the words just to say that has to be wrong. I know it's a very me-centric story, and so I'm, cautious about it, but that just cannot be the case. And maybe zooming out a little bit, it almost feels like an unwinnable game. And if a game can't be won, then people won't play it. So it's like we're sort of saying, like, work on yourself, make yourself more safe, make yourself more appropriate, but you can never win. Also, I think while we're just sort of on the topic of safety here a little bit, this might sound a little bit on the intangible side, but if on some level the only thing you see and expect from someone is one thing, then you tend to, this has been taught to me in the language of dream them up into that role or into that capacity. I know that can seem a little bit intangible, but say I think that a particular person is going to be a threat, for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. It could be religious, race, gender, whatever else. If I think they're going to be a threat to me, then I'm watching them closely and I'm going to be holding them a certain distance and I'm going to be talking to them in a certain way. I'm not going to be warm and open. And at some stage, that other person is going to pick up on the fact that I'm regarding them as a threat. And at some stage, they're going to want to push back on that a little bit or call me out on it or challenge me. And at that point in time, I've proved my point. They're a threat. I now feel threatened by them. So we can actually change other people's behavior just by coming into a space with expectations about what they're going to be.
Seeing that play out.
Yeah.
I've perpetuated it myself.
Cool. Any type of example you want to talk about?
When I've been...
I mean, we all have.
When I've been out in normie spaces. When I say I've gone out to pub with a group of friends, women type folk, and we're just out for some drinks and a boogie, threat assessing, like any person, any man approaching us, you know, asking to buy a drink or whatever as a threat. Don't appreciate needing to knock them back three times to make them go away. That didn't help the situation. But my expectation going into that night, going into that space, was that that was going to be a problem. So, you know, I'm playing my own game of what you're talking about right there.
Oh, it's so juicy, isn't it? Because in the moment, in those moments, situations like that could be a threat or maybe are not a threat. And in the moment, you've got a split second, you have to use an incredibly quick shorthand formula.
I'd already decided it was a problem, regardless of whether it was a problem or not. That's the bit I'd probably want to highlight, is I went into that with that mindset. Whereas if I didn't, I may have gone, yeah, thanks, but no thanks, mate. It's fine. And they may have taken that completely differently than me getting my back up and you know, increasingly becoming more rude. Because that perpetuates the whole problem we're talking about, right?
Yeah, really does. Emma, did you want to?
Oh, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, I'm one of those strange people. Because all my life I've been around a lot of probably more typically feminist groups more than the sort of average person, perhaps, you know, growing up with hippie parents and being raised ostensibly as a feminist and so on. But I've always sort of broken the system the other way and gone, I love being wolf whistled. I fucking love it. And I love that feeling of like that. And I've often spoken with other women, go, and they look at me like I'm crazy, because I'm the one going, oh, this is great fun. Like I'm interested knowing that experience in me and hearing the sort of, and just, oh my God, there's just so much nuance and complexity to the whole situation. But you know, it's not surprising we don't have easy answers, but I'm liking looking for them.
I love this so much, like sitting together and talking about this stuff and going, you know what, it is complicated as fuck. This is a mess. There is no chance, even with 100 episodes, we're going to get an answer to the issue you just raised of, like, you know, the drawbacks of objectification versus how it feels when you age or you become larger in size or whatever, and that objectification drops away. Oh, it's so delightfully complicated.
Some nights I want to be, you know, I want people to approach, and then other nights I'm just like, leave me the fuck alone. Because I just, weirdly, there to drink and dance and that's it. And it's really funny the difference in mindset. And the difference in experience you have going in with those different mindsets. So you know, same situation, ostensibly same people, same whatever, and the only thing that's changed is I'm more pissed off. And that definitely acts out more. So, yeah, that's why it's so complicated, because, you know, even as the same person, you change.
Yeah.
And how do you predict that?
And then work with others with it. Damn others.
Well, you get rid of them. You make sure you don't have any of them in the space, Emma.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. None of them.
Okay, point eight. So here's one around exploring our sexuality. So the point I want to make essentially is that an incredibly tilted playing field has been created. So because women don't feel safe around men and men have had homophobia, if not beaten into them, then threatened to be beaten into them over, you know, their entire lives, a decades-long process, what we've wound up with is a lot of spaces for women to explore their sexuality with other women, or, sorry, not necessarily in a same-sex, sex kind of a way, but exploring, discussing, unfolding sexuality, but just in the company of other women. There's a lot of that, and there's a hell of a lot of desperate men. And yes, men absolutely need to work on, I don't want to call it homophobia, because in my experience of teaching approximately 10,000 men about sex and having watched this dynamic play out many, many times, I would say almost none of them have been homophobic in terms of I am opposed to male-male sex, but the thought of them being involved in anything like that or being able to even lean slightly towards exploration of that, the socialization they've received against that has been extremely strong. So they need to work on that, but we also need to remember who's, like, be mindful not to victim blame them for the situation they find themselves in. Inga, you look thoughtful.
Oh, I am. I'm interested in why you wouldn't call that homophobic. Because the way it plays out to themselves, their own internalized kind of viewpoints around that to themselves, to other people, the way I've seen it play out in some sexuality spaces I've been in is where a man can be celebrated for touching a penis that's not his own for the first time.
Yep.
Even if he adds, oh, but you know, it wasn't sexual. That's extremely homophobic. It's on the path to not.
Yeah.
But for all of the, you know, penis owning people who have been touching penises for a very long time, to watch that kind of celebration en masse is an extremely hurtful and negative experience.
Yeah. I'm with you. I agree. I guess I was finding a distinction between people who would say words like, I disagree with male-male and possibly female-female sex.
Sure.
But it's still internalized homophobia. It's more, I think, internalized fear of any form of intimacy with other men. It fits in with the whole broader toxic masculinity thing we spoke about.
I agree.
But yeah, I absolutely take your point.
But no, I hear the distinction you're making there. You're talking hatred versus learned consequences of behaviour.
Yeah. And I can even find that in myself, in that I think never in this life have I actually been opposed to the concept of male-male sexual activity. But gee, it took me a long time to get over my ickiness around that. Thank God I'm past it now. Even while it was happening, I knew that it was just socialization, but it is just incredible.
Just dropping in because I just didn't nail my answer there. All I'm trying to describe is what you see anytime someone is playing outside of their normal sexual attraction. So you get exactly the same thing if you've got, say, like, for instance, a same-sex attracted person that finds themselves doing heterosexual play for some reason. So that's not a phobia or a hatred. It's just a sense of, right, yep, I'm playing with someone that's not my person. So mostly in my travels, what I've observed are men that are perfectly open-minded and perfectly happy with the concept of male-male couples, male-male sex, for people that are into that. They just don't want it for themselves. So it's not a phobia. It's not a hatred in itself. And then moving on from that, there's an interesting question of how much of that is socialization and how much of it is the true sexuality that one is born with, if that's a thing. And I think that's a fascinating and open question because I think it's very hard to tell. Like, you know what you're attracted to, but it's actually almost impossible to pick apart how much of that is nature and how much of that is nurture. I suggest that I think a lot of it is probably socialization, but I have no data to back that up with. That's just my observations. But either way, whether it's nature or nurture, again, in my observations, it's easy to find a lot of women who are sort of pro-women, who like women, who are comfortable being around women, and who are happy to even sexually explore with women to a degree, even if they themselves are heterosexual. And you just don't see that same pattern in men. You see it a little bit, but not much. So there's little or nothing in the way of sort of groups and workshops and spaces for men to explore sexuality that happens to be with other men in the same way that there are a lot of those spaces for women. And that circles us back to the point I'm making here, which that there are a lot more single men in the system than there are single women.
Anyway, on top of that, men have been socialized that they can only learn about sexuality with women. Because much of their sexuality and desire and arousal is projected onto women rather than seeing themselves as sex objects. So, yeah, we wind up with a very tilted landscape. And even if men are willing to learn about sexuality from other men, unfortunately, it's really hard to find male sex educators or any kind of a space where this stuff is done either well or at all. But I just want to, like, dip into this a little bit. To say the reason there's not that many male sex educators around is that, well, for one thing, it's a much harder business to start because not many people think of you as the person they want to learn sex from, that they will trust their sexuality with. And you have to spend a great deal of time earning trust. I've noticed that in terms of the guests that I've had through my sex education business. If they're female presenting, I can just sell them out every time. Don't even have to do anything towards trust. But male folks, much harder. But I think the main point is that except for with gay male educators, I don't think there is such a thing as a male sex educator who isn't followed around by a truckload of rumours and gossip. And the stories around that are horrific. You've kind of got to imagine that every ex that you've ever had is lining up all of their worst stories about you. And all of those stories are shared and assumed to be true, and that you don't get to hear the charge, you don't get the right of reply, and you don't get a fair hearing. And unfortunately, some of it's true. People fuck up, men fuck up, male sexuality educators fuck up, I have fucked up. But to say that I'm generally skeptical about stories and rumours and gossip would be an understatement now, unfortunately. It is not that all male sex educators are rapists. It's just that we have radically different lenses through which we view men and women, and we are absolutely desperate to take down male sexuality leaders. So I'd say that, like, dealing with that, I mean, it's impossible to put a figure on it, but it feels like about a 25% tax on your time, but about a 90% tax on your emotions. And yeah, you're fucked. But even sometimes you're just repeating stuff that you've learned from female sex educators, but on you, it looks dangerous, predatory, rapey, horrible, absolutely worthy of gossip and rumours. Yeah, and the more popular you are, the worse it becomes. And then we complain that there's no male sex educators addressing men. I'm laughing, but I should be crying.
You're crying on the inside?
Somewhere. So as a result of all of these things, in the remaining spaces or in the spaces that exist, you get wildly bewildering ticketing dynamics to workshops. So at some stage, if you're running a sexuality event, I imagine everyone's heard of the concept of a sausage fest, which is where you've got far too many men at an orgy. You can broaden that out a little bit. And at some stage, if you're running any kind of sexuality event or education, particularly one where there's any form of interaction or touch between participants, you realize you need to start balancing the genders and you work out a way to find hopefully politically appropriate language. And when you do that, my experience of that was that I could release a workshop that was, say, 6 months into the future, and within 24 hours, the entirety of the male type tickets would be sold out. And the female type tickets, you could just take your time and cruise with that for as long as you want. We also found that we would always oversell female tickets because if anything comes up in a woman's life before the event or situation or workshop or whatever, money's not that important and the experience is definitely not rare. Those men will come no matter what. They will leave their house on fire to come and pursue the opportunity that they've managed to get. And unfortunately, that means the dynamic in the room, and you see this in the dating scene as well, the dynamic in the room is that men are absolutely desperate and will pounce, and the women in the space will feel pounced upon. So no one wins from that. And it also means that you tend to wind up with men that, through lack of opportunity, are unskilled because they haven't had the learning opportunities, they haven't had the discussion spaces, no one's taught them, even if they've wanted to learn. And just to finish off this point, my feeling at the moment, there's no way to measure this, I've got no data to support this, but my feeling is that it's getting worse, not better, in terms of I feel like we are moving more towards separation than togetherness. And I feel like this dynamic of, let's just say desperate men, sorry men, but let's just say that, I feel like that's exaggerating, not decelerating. So that was point eight. About the consequences of exploring sexuality in gender separate ways.
Nice summary. You carefully avoided landmines. Very nice.
I did. Wow. Okay, great.
Enough.
Enough. Okay,
Enough that
great.
you'll be able to edit out what you don't want
Okay,
while still keeping your message. Yeah, it's tricky. It's so fucking tricky.
It is so tricky.
I hear you. I've seen it. I've put this into context. I've also attended a lot of poly type events, and a fair number of those weren't ticketed. And over time, there'd been periods where that kind of dynamic has played out. So we've ended up with more men than women, and it felt a bit like they were desperate to find anyone. That would even give them the time of day because it wasn't a, necessarily a dating kind of event. And there were measures taken to balance that kind of up. And that has worked predominantly. The last time I was in those spaces, I haven't been for a while. But yeah, so I've seen it play out in those kind of spaces as well because it's, if not sexuality, it's sexuality adjacent. And it has a very similar kind of feel in a lot of ways. But how it's handled by the organisers also goes a long way into normalising that and balancing that and welcoming a diverse range of people and being okay with handling, men who are disappointed that they didn't find a lot of women. And yeah, so how you handle those conversations is as important as any other measure that you have. And you're right, there's a lot of emotional labor that goes into that. So yeah, it's just yeah.
And spaces like that. So again, we're talking in the binary, and we're also talking in a heteronormative way. Spaces like that, women feel like they are prey. Like that's not a comfortable environment to be in. You've got to just be so ready with your stop signs and your get the fuck away attitude. And men feel disgusting in those spaces. It's not.
That's just no fun for anyone who just wants to have a good time and meet people.
So, point nine, last point and longest point. just before I get into it, I just thinking about what you said a moment ago, Inga, about managing to avoid landmines. I very much doubt it. There's so much about this topic in particular. You know, at the start, I said I was nervous. There's just so much about this topic, and it is so sacred and so important to so many of us. It is so hard to talk about this stuff without body slamming landmines. Yeah. Apologies. That's not my intention. All right. Last point, my biggest point, like it's sort of already come through as a theme. We tend to stop men from accessing the very spaces we need them to have access to. So we want men to be better communicators and softer and nicer people, and to be more respectful and to be better socialized, or in summary, to be more human. The fun thing about all of those skills, though, is that you cannot learn them from a book, or like the amount that you can learn them from a book is very little. Literally, the only way to learn good, respectful socialization is to experience it in person. Like you actually need to feel yourself what it's like to be honored and respected. So, extending a little, I think, perhaps ironically, what happens in women's groups is something that everyone needs to experience. So there's a sacredness often, respect, an honouring, and perhaps a gentleness, as well as anger as needed. I don't want to be all about the nice squishy stuff. But if we agree that in general women are better at those things, and better at humaning and relationships and communication and respect, then it's women that men need to learn from. So in the same way that, you know, as women started to enter the workplace, women needed to learn those skills from men. And yeah, we need men to learn those skills from women. But unfortunately, the more we go into separate spaces, men can't. So yeah, if we're not already there, like this is the point where women start screaming on some level, and men are starting to listen very carefully and intensely at this point in time. In talking about this with people, with women that run women-only spaces, so talking specifically about sexuality and circles and so forth, by far the main response that I get from people is that men need to go and sort this out for themselves. Like this is not our problem, not my problem. Men created these problems. Men can sort it out, or something like that. And I definitely understand it, at least to a degree. There's just a couple of wee little problems with that. I think I've articulated like five different ways that this tends to play out. One of the ways is that it can actually work. Like for a small number of men, and again, no way of measuring this, but for a small number of men, it can actually work. They were probably already on board to a degree in the right way, but if not, they somehow find the resources, perhaps including other men that have got those resources, and everyone lives happily ever after. So it can work out well. Second category of people is that those men just can't find anything because it's a bit of a question of the blind leading the blind. They get lost. They certainly don't win despite wanting to. And so they remain as per usual male or bloke kind of socialization. So talking about sports and cars and talking shoulder to shoulder. The third group of men get furious in response to the furiosity that they've received. So that sense of like fuck off and sort it out for yourself, that anger that sometimes begats anger. So they will find for themselves an angry corner of the men's movement. I'm not well versed on Andrew Tate, but the way that that area is spoken about feels like it's the right general kind of zone. And so, yeah, men become radicalized and even sometimes militarized, like when you start to think about the hard right wing. And was it the good old boys?
No, it was not the Good Old Boys. That was a film. I meant to refer to the Proud Boys, which is the regressive right-wing male-only movement that emerged in the United States in around, I don't know, around 2017, somewhere there.
Like
I think so.
some of the men that we've said go and sort it out for yourselves, they wind up in the Good Old Boys.
I guess that's one way of sorting it out.
Yeah. And category four, even if they don't wind up in the angry corner, they find some other fucked up corner that at least shows compassion for them. But it's not a good outcome for women. So I'm talking about pickup artists or conservatives or the other section of the incels, perhaps. So even if you're a man trying to navigate that system, even if you've got a group of people who you don't necessarily agree with their politics and decisions or whatever else, but if they're saying you're important, we respect you, you're valuable, and you've got another group who maybe you agree with their ideas, but they're saying you're an asshole and a perpetrator, the temptation to gravitate towards the group that is treating you well is very strong. And that's why those movements, I think, are getting such an upswell at the moment.
They're feeling heard.
Yeah.
Okay, so we recorded this episode before the 2024 American elections. And in the few months that have passed since then, Trump has now won that election. For what I'm about to say, by the way, about that topic, it doesn't matter if you are pro-Trump or anti-Trump or whatever else, that's not relevant. But I think one thing we can agree on, regardless, is that in general, the women's movement thinks that Trump is a bad idea for women's rights and women. I think both sides would agree on that, that the women's movement holds that perspective. So with that in mind, I mean, there's a lot of things that decide an election, but it looks like one of the factors that's in the mix is that, and I've seen this from several sources, that younger men effectively decided the election. What they were receiving from the left leading up to the election, and by leading up, I mean, the preceding few months, but also the years before that, was nasty. They were having jokes made at them. They were being slapped around like we sort of usually slap around sort of men or men's issues. And in perhaps a beautiful, depending on your perspective, horrible, but in a beautiful example of what we've just been talking about on this episode, even though a lot of those young men were not previously Trump voters, at least they were being treated respectfully by the Trump side and to a degree, like they had important issues that deserved to be listened to. So now the left has lost that election and the left is despairing. And in general, I would regard myself as, for the most part, on the left. And so I would say to us, every time that we on the left side of politics are dismissive of men, or we tell them that they, we flick them aside and sort of tell them they should go and sort things out for themselves, we are running the risk of losing them and giving power to the other side. To a degree, we made this bed and it's now ours to lie in.
And the last category is they just get angry or frustrated or isolated or alone, can't go either way, they don't find anything, and they either explode inward or outward. Violence against others or violence against yourself. Yeah, and then I guess there's like another problem that flows out of that. Maybe we'll just talk about it in the gender flip first as an example. Let's go back in time to the 1950s, when women realized that they wanted what men had. Some men were on board with that request straight away, and some men said, "Fuck off, this is our space." And women said, "Okay, here's my lawyer. I'm suing you." Like they lawyered up. And in my personal opinion, thank God, 100% yay for that. But to end the gender flip on that, we are now seeing the beginning of that reaction in some parts of the men's movement, in that spaces that are designated woman only are facing legal challenges. And it is not an enjoying or pleasing process. So another outcome of men should go and sort it out for themselves is lawsuits.
Mona, the Mona exhibit, most recently.
Yep. Beautiful example.
Kind of see this play out a little if you want to use a like non-gender. Might be a bit complicated, but if I dumb it down, if I keep it to the simple kind of aspects, money. It's like telling those countries who don't have, a good economy or good natural resources, well, just figure it out for yourself.
It
Have
is.
fun with that. Figure
It
it
is.
out.
It
We
is.
did, you should.
It is exactly like, whilst putting copyright mechanisms in place to make sure that your technology and equipment and money can't be shared.
Absolutely, yes.
So obviously, the point I'm trying to make is that telling men to just go and sort it out, while I really understand it, at best, it's hit and miss, and at worst, I think it's making things worse. Making things much worse. I'd like to go on to a little reading. So this is a person describing their experience in their women's group, and I've edited it ever so slightly just for shortness, but I think it's just a I love it. I love the group that they're describing. Quote, "Not too long ago, I was sitting around our women's circle. It was a special moment where I gazed around at these remarkable souls, each with their unique stories and experiences. In that precious moment, I allowed my heart to paint a vivid picture of us many de years down the road, still gathering together with a beautiful patina of wisdom, our hair turned a graceful shade of grey. The image was so poignant that tears welled up in my eyes. As I shared this vision with my dear circle, laughter filled the air as we playfully imagined what conversations we'd have in our golden years, how our agility might wane, how the cherished memories we'd carry with us would take shape. And I realised that these women have become my lifeblood, my steadfast companions on this incredible journey called life. We have gathered every month, offering unwavering support and love to one another. Together, we have witnessed the joys and pains of motherhood, cradled each other through heart-wrenching relationship challenges, celebrated bold decisions to start anew, and shared countless doubts, fears, wins, and moments of celebration. It's during life's most tumultuous times that the strength of a woman's circle truly shines, providing a safety net of unwavering support. However, it's not just in the big life upheavals that our women's circle has been a blessing. It's the small, everyday moments. Sharing food, sipping tea, and creating a treasure trove of collective memories over time that have made this journey truly extraordinary." End quote. So when I think back over what men need, men are absolutely desperate for that. I mean, I think everyone is. I think that's the experience that we all need as humans. And I think that if men did have access to those experiences, almost all of the, quote, problems with men, would be solved or would be a long way on their way to being a solution. I think that men that have a lived experience like the one that was just described above would be very different creatures on this planet. And I know that that's a really exaggerated case. I know there's a huge number of women that have never had an experience anything like that. So we're massively in the generalizations here. But yeah, as an exaggeration, perhaps that's a little bit of a snapshot of the difference between male and female spaces.
I was also listening to that going, well, I have that, but with my group of friends. It's not with I don't go to women's circles, and I have those experiences where I was thinking, well, isn't that whimsical? And that I actually have what I think is actually nicer because I don't drink tea, so fuck that. No, I have that, and I am massively grateful for it, and it is what brings joy to my world. And it definitely isn't female only or single gendered spaces that do that. So.
I love it. I love where you're going with this. We're getting towards the end of what I wanted to chat about, which is sort of like where to from here and possible solutions and whatever stuff. And your story matches mine. I feel incredibly lucky that I have been exposed to, let's say, that culture at some stage back there, right in my early years. Like in my earlier 20s, I was running men's groups. I thought that that was a good use of my energy. I feel like I've watched those patterns of being in a bubble play out too many times over and over, even with the best of intentions and done as carefully as possible. And so I've decided not to be in gender spaces for myself. But I'm in the same boat as you. And I feel like I've been in so many circles and groups that have been like that, but have been inclusive of all genders. So part of what I want to say is it's not that hard. It's not that impossible.
I absolutely think all genders is the much better way to go. I identify with a really why I understand this is so important is because regardless of my gender, I have found that particularly difficult to access.
Right,
Yeah.
right, right.
Probably unimportant, but anyway.
I know for
Very important.
myself, I feel like I'm very much aligned with the person I was quoting in that I find spaces like that really valuable. And maybe it's a little bit of a function of the aging process and no longer enjoying loud, late, large experiences. I'm now much more of a fan of small, intimate, carefully crafted, carefully held spaces, intentional spaces. And I think that like I bring some skill to the game in terms of crafting those spaces. And I think that when I was in my early 20s, I realized I hadn't cried for 8 years, and I was nowhere near emotional literacy or communication skills. And I just feel so grateful for the fact that I have been exposed to that culture. Let's call it the culture of women, huge generalization, in order to have those experiences, and they have changed me and hearing stories. So I am so grateful. I just, now's a good a time as any to say thank you.
I feel so blessed to have the sorts of crew around that I do. And it has been a lot of work. And I'm fortunate enough in that I, connecting with humans is something I like doing and I'm good at. So that has come easily or more easily for me. But it has actually been a massive part of my life and my work. I'm getting the benefits now, but and there's zillions of people, I believe, that I talk to or that I work with that I come across that are desperate. Hang on, I was about to say something that was implying that you're desperate for this connection, which you very well may not be at all. But I see lots of people who are really urgent for that type of connection and don't know how to find it, where to find it, how to keep hold of it. Like, I see that all of that is the same thing. And then there's people who just don't particularly like people. I live with one and he just doesn't really like people. And though for that type of interaction isn't important or isn't
Sought after.
high. Yeah, isn't high on the priority list. And there's plenty of other things to do or to value and so on. So I'm not saying that it should be valuable, but my experience is that even those of us who absolutely long for those spaces, it's quite a mission to try to find them, to try to create them, to know how to connect with them. And I think in that sense, I'm also highly like agreeing or continuing with what Roger's saying of the separation of, well, you can't be in this space because of your gender. That's a monster problem. That's just making it harder for everyone to who wants to be more connected to be able to be.
Ironically, I think it's because they are so gendered that's made it less accessible for me.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Because I feel like I need to be a real woman to participate in some of these spaces, and that's just not my experience and is a bit scary.
Well,
So
and
it's
that's why,
actually been a barrier.
and totally, that's why I don't go to them as well because I don't really feel connected there, and I feel a bit alien and strange, which is why I'm super grateful that I've been able to create them with mixed genders to be able to just go, well, I get this juice and this wealth of connection, and it's markedly because of it not being gendered, I believe.
I know for myself, having received that message of effectively, fuck off and sort it out for yourself over the years, I can see the temptation to allow the pendulum to swing the other way. Like I say, I was involved with men's groups just for a little while. And at times it's been really tempting, like given the content that we've covered in the last episodes and so forth, there are aspects of those groups that I was talking about before that would be a soft landing place for some of those thoughts. But for me, that just feels like a reaction to a reaction to a reaction to a reaction, and it feels like a repetition of the problem, pendulum swinging backwards and forwards. So I've deliberately, even though it would have been a more comfortable and easy path, I've deliberately held myself back from those spaces. But yeah, I like how it's all working out. In talking about this stuff with folks who haven't thought about like the ideas that we've just covered in the last hour or so, I find I'm often met with cognitive dissonance, because some of what we've just been discussing is really right. Like, some of it's just really unshakable and it's really solid. And I'm sure there's tons of it which is doesn't make sense and doesn't add up, and that I and we haven't thought through whatever. But some of it is incredibly solid. And it tends to create in people a bit of cognitive dissonance, which is a belief that you have clashes with another belief that you've got, or an action or a need. So, yeah, people tend to either change or justify or have a meltdown at that point in time. What I mostly see in response to this conversation is people falling back. That's really charged language. What comes up for people mostly when thinking about this stuff is the need for safety. Safety is cited as, I think, the one of the main factors as to why we need gender separate spaces. So, absolutely, safety is a factor, and depending on the environment, a huge factor. But I think, actually, no, before I move off that, if I may speak on behalf of my people, I want to say sorry for what my people have done to your people. Like, if we're talking about safety.
I think that goes both ways.
Sure. Thank you.
What we're lacking is a trauma-informed perspective on how to hold space for traumatized people,
yeah,
to engage with people who look like other people who have traumatized them, and actually move through that into, yeah, a way where they can engage. That's what, yes, we're actually missing.
Yes, and I'm so on board with that safety issue, and I so agree with you that I set up my entire business around that, around creating mixed gender spaces that had enough elements of safety built into them. And it just made me so happy to have at least moderate success in doing that. And in running what people consistently fed back was the safest sexuality spaces they've been in. So I want to say all of that by way of saying I'm so on board with the safety issue. At the same time, I want to say I don't think safety is the only factor at play here. And I don't even think it's the biggest factor, particularly if we're talking about more therapeutic support circle held spaces, intentional spaces like that. I don't think safety is even the biggest factor. What I think is unsaid is actually something more like men give us the shits. They don't know how to do this. They are low quality and they mess this up for the rest of us. And I want to hang out with high quality people. I don't want to spend time coaching beginners. Saying it like that is understandably really hard to say, because it nudges up against our general sense of fairness, and it's harsh.
No, it's the same opinion we have with kids. I can't tolerate those noisy little shits. Can't they just, like, can't they learn already? Like, what? Why are they being so fucking annoying? Like, yeah, it's exactly the same mentality our society has to children.
Agreed. There is legitimacy to that, but I think if the issue is not about safety, then please don't call it safety, because calling it a safety issue just contributes to the idea that men just rape and pillage, and then you wind up with man versus bear debates and so forth. And it also contributes to making sure that men don't get precisely the thing we need them to have, which is both like a recognition that they haven't had access to that form of education and also the spaces where they can actually get it. But yeah, with that said, with that counterpoint said, then yeah, like, if it's safety, I get it. I've got your back.
And even if it is safety, you know, hopefully listeners are on track enough to sort of glean that the more male-presenting people and male-cultured people have ability to see into, hear into, and feel into a quote unquote female world, the safer everyone is. Like, it's right there.
It is. Conversely, if women folk are also exposed to men folk who are interested, who can hear, who aren't their perpetrators, then they also get to relearn that and feel safer as well, like by themselves.
Yeah, and just feel safer and happier in the world, being that there just happen to be some men around.
Massive agree. I think it's not unsolvable. I think if the problem is just bias, either for the facilitator of a space or of a participant, then that needs to be worked on for what it is. Like if you just don't like men or women, then don't glorify it, get therapy. Like work on it. It's just diversity work like anything else. Yeah, as I say, I decided against gender separate spaces and discovered that mixed gender spaces are, I'm going to go right ahead and say, more valuable to me by a considerable margin, if only for the counterpoint and the diversity of experiences, particularly if we're talking about gender stuff. I love being called out on my bullshit. I get some wacky ideas on gender. This material we're working on at the moment, I've been working on this for 30 years, and my God, I've gone off on some tangents at times and being brought back into line. Oh, what an honor. Yeah, and just all the entirety and the rest of it, and all of what you were just saying, Emma, about the safety that comes from the sense that we can actually be together. I prefer that world. I think you can run gender separate groups, or you can run any separate isolated group, if there's a value and a focus on the absent role, or the absent group, or the absent person. So if you intentionally and deliberately make sure that that is represented, I've seen it done. But it does take a lot of intention and effort. However, I think since most of the groups I've been talking about, they're actually there specifically to exclude a role and exclude a viewpoint. You know, that's what I've just described is not terribly appealing. And you can also just run a group along the lines of like, you know, if you can't say anything nice about a group of people, then don't say anything. It's surprising how many problems that fixes.
To my mind, having a inclusive space where you can break out into smaller groups that might be a little bit separate, but then come back and share from that separate viewpoint together would have a foot in both camps. And potentially the benefits of being able to talk about your experience in a what you would consider a safer environment, but then if not you, then someone else being able to bring that to a shared space and have that story heard, even if it's not by your mouth.
I think a little bit of this is up to what we can imagine, and I don't mean to dismiss this psychological hurdle because it's a big one. You see this in a lot of other situations. You see it when heterosexual sexuality facilitators look towards making the leap towards opening to different relationship styles. And even though all of the content is the same, it feels like it's just a completely different world. So I've had, I know one example, I had a female facilitator who has been running women's sexuality spaces for hetero women for a long time, or relationship workshops more accurately, probably. And she was quite confronted when she became aware that she had some lesbian folks coming along to an upcoming workshop. So we did some coaching together around it. And she was just freaking out, just like, I don't have the skills to hold this. These are a whole different type of creature, and what am I going to do? And of course, the obvious answer was that literally nothing about your workshop needs to change except just your imagination. And stop assuming perhaps that the partner is going to be male. You do need to make that little modification. But yeah, in some ways it's just a question of imagination. So I would invite the listener to imagine your gender separate space with all varieties of beautiful people in it. But at the same time, I get it. I get that that's quite a psychological leap. So I'm not saying that that's nothing. But if that's the only thing standing between us and gender peace, then please look at it. Okay, so to recap and summarise, as things stand at the moment, I think that we are generations away from solving the problem with men, because they literally can't get access to the experiences and the education and the culture that we need them to have. As far as I can tell, which is not that accurate, but as far as I can tell, we seem to be moving further towards separation. And one of the outcomes of this is that men are getting pushed more towards toxic masculinity. I personally think we need to go back to our roots as feminists and reconcile some of those early core beliefs. So, for instance, around not being judged on our gender, especially not negatively, to not have our gender define our options or our choices, to recognise that a person is not responsible for the actions of other people, even if they're of the same gender, you know, or age or race or religion, etc. I think we need to emphasise working with each other rather than sort of almost fetishising and celebrating difference. I mean, I know there's a time to celebrate difference, but then you can go too far with that. And I think we need to remember that there's generally more difference within groups than there is between them. So as things stand at the moment, I feel like we're at a moment of incongruence, which is we're saying don't judge us by our gender, but at the same time we are absolutely defining ourselves and others by gender. And I think that incongruence never works for very long. I also think that those incongruences and those inconsistencies go a long way to explaining the kind of the haphazard and mixed progress we're making with the gender equality movement. We opened the show many episodes ago now, talking about, you know, in some ways we're making progress clearly, and in other ways we're going backwards. And I think this inconsistency is a decent part of it. And yeah, I really get that. Since we've been talking mostly about women's spaces, I really get that they are extremely important to a large number of people, and it's almost impossible to imagine that safety and that level of development with men being there. So I just really hear that, and I get that this is a cracker of a topic. Maybe I'll just finish off by saying, at the same time, this will make more sense in a moment, I get an incredible joy of sharing power tool skills with women, with anyone that doesn't have the skills. But I personally get a joy, like I spend a little bit of time in the construction industry. My point is, something happens when we share our privileges and share our education and knowledge, and it's the opposite of horrible. It's the opposite of unsafe. It's the opposite of a trauma or dragging people along. It's one of the things that makes us social creatures. We get a reward hit from it. We get a dopamine hit from it. And when you see people... I can't help thinking about the parallel concept of kids that you brought up, Inga. Like, there's a joy from watching development and change and evolution over time. And I just want to chuck it in the mix that this particular problem, this particular challenge of the gender movement can also be blissful.
Agreed. There's nothing quite like watching people blossom and not be held back by the same things that have been holding them back for a really long time. Mm. Learning new skills is fun.
I love welding.
Nice.
I'm proud to be good at it.
Yeah. And I think there's also something about, like, watching, since we're talking about men that don't get it, there's something amazing about watching men get it.
That's beautiful. I love it. And it is really freaky watching, you know, when I'm with these young teenagers, watching them go, oh, Andrew Tate, blah, blah, he's great. And I'm like, oh, come on, we've got so many better options. Let's, but knowing that they just want to be heard and just want to be valued. And it's just like the moment that you can, that I could show them value was so lovely. And just to go, come on, there's still hope here. A little bit.
Alrighty, so I feel like we managed to get across the not quite impossibility, just This is a really juicy, chunky topic. There's no obvious, clear, easy wins or like really, really easy, clear outcomes. Yeah.
About changing the way people think about it, though, that there is a clear, distinctive, easy answer. And exploring, being open to the possibility of exploring other ways of doing things.
Yeah. And I think even being mindful of the challenges and pitfalls of something allows you to perhaps do it in a way which doesn't buy into those pitfalls so much.
The project side of me is like, if you don't know what your risks are, you can't avoid them becoming issues.
Nice.
Pretty much. I
Well,
corporate it up for you. That's what I'm here for.
you know how much we love a corporate endpoint around here, so perhaps on that we'll let the minutes read that this meeting finished. Thanks, gang.
Is
Thanks.
concluded.
Thanks for
Thank you.
exploring a
Lovely.
very juicy topic with me.
It's
That's
okay.
great.
Are you okay? You had
Ah,
some interesting moments.
yeah, I did. Thank you.
You can
Yes,
stop the
I.
recording if you like. You don't have to.
Yeah, I am okay, thanks. There were yeah, there's definitely some moments in there around like when you lean in and feel into the tragedy of some of this mess. Ugh. They're just all sides of it. There's just so much pain everywhere. So yeah, no, fortunately I am more emotionally fluid than I was when I was 21. I feel
Okay.
fine now having explored those states. But yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Phew, that was a juicy episode. In listening back to it in editing, there's only one extra thought I wanted to add, which is one of the arguments that's made in favour. So, the way I've heard this is in terms of an argument in favour of women's groups, is observing that when men are introduced into a space, women, and obviously this is going to assume a whole lot of heterosexuality here, sorry about that, women start competing with each other for the attention of men. And so it lowers the quality of group and so forth. And that's been backed up. Not only is that something that you'll hear anecdotally, but I've seen research that looks credible to me, suggesting that something like that is the case. And I've just sort of been sitting with that for a while, not quite working out on what level it was uncomfortable. And for me, it got much clearer when I gender flipped the situation. So if you imagine the reverse, and again, it's much easier in my mind to go back to like the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, when women were just making their approach on their right to be in the workplace. And one of the defenses that those male-dominated spaces had was that men said, "Well, you know, we don't want to be we don't want to be distracted by women in the workplace." And it's also true in my experience that that does happen amongst men folk. We do start to compete with each other and become distracted. However, in this gender-flipped example, I don't for a second think that that's a good reason to exclude women from the workplace. I think men need to work on something there. That's why I like gender flipping stuff, because if that's not a good reason to exclude women, I also don't think it's a good reason to exclude men.